How about the Bears coach, Matt Eberflus, seemingly to begrudgingly admit that the play call on fourth and one from the goal line might have been better? Well, almost admitting it. Almost. Eberflus, who said the Bears liked the play on Sunday after the game, admitted he'd have preferred not having to get to fourth down. And when asked if the speed of the Colts' defense was a factor, listen to this.
We ran it direct, you know, three times in a row, and then we had an option to do either one on the fourth one. So, I as the head coach would like him to do it in those three plays. That way I don't have to make that decision on fourth down. But I do believe that you do have to take it in account for speed. But again, if the look was right, that was going to be a good play for sure.
All right. How do you respond to what Matt Eberflus had to say there?
Listen. Someone sit him down, show him the play again. It doesn't matter what theoretically the play was supposed to look like. If the look had been this, it was a terrible play. And you got steamrolled. And you had a defensive tackle in the backfield right as you started the play. And the quarterback had no choice but to flip it out. And guess what? You got buried. You had two guys on the outside. They sniffed that out, and they destroyed you, and you lost 12 yards. Stop saying you like the play. If and buts and candy and nuts, that's a terrible play. It's a terrible play. Run the damn ball straight up the middle. Do it four times, and if you end up on the inch line, you end up on the inch line. They're better than you. But that was awful. That was god-awful. Just admit it, and let's move on. God, I couldn't believe that answer.
Yeah, it was an answer that you would rather not have heard from your head football coach. And as a defensive guy, something I want to get to in a minute. But Darnell Wright absolutely whiffed turnstile, as Biggs would like to say, on that third down play. If he even makes contact with his defender, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know how he did that. If he just touches the guy, they score there. Here's the other thing. If you do like that play so much, why not run that on second or third down, right? Because everybody's expecting you to run it straight ahead. That's what teams do. That's what you should do. You should run it straight ahead. But if you're going to get cute, why not get cute on second or third down? And I will say, with this defense, why not take the 3 points? It's 7-0. Take the 3 points. You're better than them. You think you're better than them. Your defense has been playing great. Take the 3 points. Go into halftime down 7-3.
I think they did the right thing in going for it on fourth down. You need to score a touchdown in that situation, given the circumstances. On first down, they did get cute. They got too cute, and that should have been the lesson they learned. And then you run it right up the middle, and you get in the I formation, or you get into behind center, and you get a yard, and you give your offensive line credit and respect by saying that they can get the yard. If they don't, that's on them. But you trust them to get the yard. What they did, the Bears are trying to play chess, and all you need to do is play checkers. They're overcomplicating things. They got another quarterback. They got another offensive coordinator, trying to get too cute in that situation. Just run the ball. And if you didn't make it, just own it. This kind of conversation that Matt Eberflus is continuing is just, this has been disappointing in the way that he's handled this portion of what happened Sunday. The post-game rationalization about being encouraged, the day after overreaction day, and he can't even acknowledge that this was a bad decision. Just own it. People will respect you more, and you'll learn from the mistake, because you know what? It was a mistake. It was a bad call. It was a terrible sequence, and you deserved what happened to you. You don't run an option play to the short side that you only... It worked in practice. Who practices anymore at a speed that it matters? Come on now.
If it
I'm not
the
talking
right
necessarily
look,
about a pick six or something like that.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. 7 o'clock is Biggs time. Do you think the Bears will stick with Matt Pryor, who started in place of Nate Davis at right guard and played 79 snaps on Sunday, or will they go back to Nate Davis? Was the decision by Eberflus that proved he could be tough with players, or was this injury related?
I don't really know, because I don't think it's been made clear. Do we know that? Have I missed that? Is it something that they have talked around? Because, again, if I were the coach of this team and I bench somebody because of poor play, I would let that be known to everybody, including my locker room, who may already know, but my fan base. And that would be something I would not necessarily be proud of, but I would want it known, because you have to set a standard. And you don't want to see the standards sliding. And if this is in fact something that is an ode to accountability, then you need to own that as well, because good for you. If you benched a veteran who's your highest paid offensive lineman, I think that's significant. And if you did it because not the injury that kept him out of practice at times last week, because he has not been interested or engaged, therefore he has not been good, then make that known. Embrace that idea, because that says that you have a standard that needs to be met. And if it isn't, there will be consequences. There should be consequences. There should be consequences to everything bad that happened on Sunday. And the consequence of calling a speed option on 4th and 1 should be taking that page out of the playbook and burning it in a ceremony.
So being present and being prepared, two things that I think Matt Pryor has been doing versus what Nate Davis has been doing is a big thing, right? So I think that's part of it. I think they were sick and tired, the Bears, of every day that this soft tissue injury was limiting their practice time. Now, here's what you don't know. Can the Bears offensive line and the run game coordinator and Matt Eberflus's best buddy in the whole wide world teach Matt Pryor how to go second level? Now, that's the difference. Tackles really don't go second level all that often. And there were a couple of pieces of tape that I saw out there on social media where Matt Pryor absolutely whiffs when he goes out to the, he gets to the second level, but he doesn't know the idea of just hit somebody who has a different jersey on than you. That when you don't know what to do, hit a guy with the other jersey. Don't miss both guys with the other jersey. So I hope they were punishing Nate Davis. But if Matt Pryor can't figure out how to go next level, unfortunately, you got to have Nate Davis back in there this week.
Yeah, I'm going to lean on the injury. I'm going to say that Nate Davis is having an groin injury. Limit him. He did come into the game when they were stuck, but it was just for a play. And that makes you wonder how seriously injured he is. But, you know, you can't practice because you have a groin injury. It's hard to then play on Sunday. So they had to replace him all week, and then they decided to give that a whirl. This isn't working. Whatever's going on with Nate Davis, and if it's tough love, if it's whatever it is, it's not working. If they're trying to motivate him, it's not working. If he has an injury, that means it's not working. Whatever's gone on with Nate Davis, it really hasn't worked. He hasn't been able to practice much in the offseason. He doesn't seem to be ready for the season to begin. And now he's carrying an injury. And whether it's a soft tissue injury and they're mad about it, or whether it really is debilitating, doesn't really matter, because it's not working. So at this point, that's just the situation you're in with the guy. If you can get him up and running and practicing, maybe he can move back into the lineup. But I think they seem to want him to practice before they play him. So feel free to not play him.
Oh, boy. Good question.
That's the voice of Coach Wanstead. He's here for two big segments beginning at 7:44 with Mully and Haw. Matt Eberflus seemed to reluctantly criticize Caleb Williams for an interception on a throw into double coverage intended for Rome Odunze. He called it an aggressive throw and said the safe throw would have been going into the flat.
You never want to take away his aggressiveness, but he has to be really good with the football. And that's his number one job as a quarterback.
Is four picks the last two games too much?
Yes, four picks is too much in two games. Two picks a game is not going to play with the Bears and with the deficits that they have. And you know, two picks and a fumble is not good. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. You got to get a grip on that. I think it's really interesting that the quarterback says that his number one job as a quarterback is to protect the football. Because that's not the way they're playing. And that's not, you know, you don't have a guy pass what was it, 56 pass attempts, right? With the sacks?
56 pass plays that were called, four sacks, 52 attempts.
So you don't really want to throw the ball 56 times if you're worried about giving the ball away. Yeah. I'm being honest about
it. Oh, my gosh. I know.
I'm saying.
Understatement of the day.
There are a lot of seemingly contrary things going on. And I'm not sure exactly. I don't know how Matt Eberflus talks to the player. I hope it's a lot more forthright and it's not as reluctant as this was. But, yeah, we can't have that. Would have been a sufficient answer.
Well, this starts opening the door on what you guys talked about in the first segment of the show with Jaden Daniels. He sets a record for complete. And, again, he took what the defense gave him. We also heard Eberflus yesterday in that meeting, the Zoom meeting, talking about, like, as soon as one thing's not open, the quarterback needs to go to the, like, third thing. He almost said, like, skip your second read. That's what I took away from it. I don't know what you guys did, but like he's got to know what the third option is, and that should be open. Now, you don't want to take the aggressiveness out. We talk about, you know, there's got to be a few plays where you're taking the shot downfield, his long ball. But here's the other, is he afraid or he doesn't want, he doesn't run the ball. Run the ball. Take the easy stuff. You saw that last night. Both Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels took easy when they're not there. Josh Allen, but Josh Allen's kind of a run quarterback. But those two guys who are not, when there was nothing open, they ran and slid and got five or six easy yards. He's not even doing that, and that's what drives me crazy.
It's okay for Matt Eberflus to criticize or to critique Caleb Williams in a way that maybe isn't all effusive praise. That's got to be the relationship they have. That's got to be the dialogue and the way that we get used to hearing him talk about Caleb Williams. It shouldn't stand out when he says something that is maybe veiled criticism, because you never want to take away his aggressiveness. He has to be really good with the football. Yes, he does. Three turnovers on Sunday. That's the reason you lost that game. Is because, now it wasn't his fault necessarily, but if any quarterback not named Caleb Williams in the past whatever, however many years you want to attach it, and had a fourth quarter turnover, we would be saying the quarterback can't have a fourth quarter turnover. And for 2 weeks in a row now, Caleb Williams has been too careless with the football. He has a lot of things that get you excited. There are a lot of things that you're going to be happy about the reason he's here. But he has to do what he did well in the opener, despite him not throwing for many yards in the opener. He did protect the football. First, do no harm. Every quarterback has the same football Hippocratic oath. You can't get your team beat. Anthony Richardson nearly tried hard to get the Colts beat. The Bears wouldn't let him. They know how to lose. But if you're Caleb Williams, yes, your biggest takeaway isn't 33 completions.
They've won one game.
363 yards.
No turnovers in that game.
And they didn't have any turnovers. So your takeaway from Sunday, if you're Caleb Williams, is there were too many takeaways that you were responsible for. Clean it up. And that's what Matt Eberflus essentially was saying. If it means, you know, kind of checking down to clean it up, check down to clean it up. You can still hit big on the home run. You can still think aggressively, but you got to be smart. And he wasn't being smart.
Different question on a different topic.
Mike Florio's voice there. You'll hear more from Mike at 8:44. How interested are you in whether the White Sox break that MLB record at home tonight for the most losses in a season? It would be their 121st. On the 2024 Chicago sports calendar, how newsworthy of a night is that really?
Well, I think that there's two different questions here, maybe. That one, how interested are you in it? Maybe not at all. If you're tired of the White Sox losing, it's a redundant, tired theme. We talk about it all the time and try to ignore it as best we can. It is a sports talk radio show, though. It's hard to ignore. I wish we could. We can't. And tonight, you'll see the White Sox game get attention from national news services, from national reporters. This is a national story because the national pastime has a new low watermark, the 2024 White Sox, the 121st loss. This is history in the making. Maybe it happens tonight with Jonathan Cannon on the mound. Maybe it doesn't. But you have to watch, and people will have to show up. There will be people attending this game, covering this game, that don't typically cover games for a baseball team in September, late September. But this is newsworthy. It is unfortunately significant. And the White Sox, I don't know, should you lean into it and sell tickets for $1.21 or sell concession stand items for $1.21? 121 cents will get you whatever. I don't know if they do that. I doubt that they will. But it will be one of those nights that I think that it's inevitable. I think maybe it happens tonight. You circled September 24th in your calendar, and you'll never forget this night at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Well, Hawk would always – history, right? History could be made in the wrong fashion. I'm curious also is how – are people going to go to the game, Dave? And I think it's like a –
I think you should go, Dustin.
We talked about Thursday. It's a day game, and crochet throws. So if there's somehow that they can make this go until then – that would be pretty fun. A day game with Crochet. See if Crochet gets kind of fired up for the game and not want to be on the mound when that goes down. Unfortunately, it's going to happen, and we'll see how people react to it.
Yeah, it's already happened in my mind. This is not any kind of breaking news. This is just the day it happens. I think the season will go down in history. I don't think any single day, any one loss will go down as, oh, do you remember that day? Oh, I'll never forget that day. And so, no, don't really care. I'll be aware when it happens. I'm not planning on watching it. I don't want to pay for the campfire shake. I'm not going out there. You know, there's no joy in Mudville. So you won't, we are, I suppose, required to talk about it. Jerry Reinsdorf's team, Jerry Reinsdorf's mission, his goal achieved. We should hear from him. Wasn't he going to talk? Didn't he threaten that he would talk at
the end of the season? Yeah. Tonight, though.
Oh, no. We should get him out there. He should be, maybe have him throw out the first pitch.
That'd be something.
As a leader, I think you shy away from those questions.
Word is the Cubs plan on adding a free agent starter via free agency in this offseason. But if you could gift them one other player, what position would you choose? Do they need a power bat, more slug, a closer, a late inning reliever? What is the team's greatest need?
I think I'd give them a bullpen relief. And I don't know if that's a closer or not. I don't know that they want to spend on a closer per se. But I think that's what they need. I think when you look at the number of blown saves, and let's be honest about it, they weren't all in the ninth inning. But I think that if they could trim that in half, and I don't know, is Hodge the guy? I mean, do you feel like they are prepared to have enough of a group that they can handle that aspect of it next year? I don't know that you need to sign this year's Hector Neris, but they need help in that area. And if I could gift them something, it would be help in that area. And I don't think they want to spend $20 million on that kind of a player, but I think that they need help in that area more so than anything else. I mean, you'd love to see more slug. You'd love to see them get another power bat. We talked about that. They don't seem like it seems like they've got a lot of players coming up, but not like anybody. It's not like they've got like a six war player even in their whole group. And so that means everybody needs to be good for you to be successful. You'd love for them to have that kind of player, but I don't think they're going to be able to go out there. There's only like 13 of them in the league or something. Is that what the number was? So I think it's harder to get. But I would say if I could give them anything, it would be a reliable arm in the bullpen that would lessen whatever their needs are and hopefully aid them in getting more saves.
Yeah, I believe it's 27 one-run losses. So I think if you had that guy, if you cut that in half, the Cubs are in the postseason. Right, they're in the postseason. We're talking Cubs baseball, equal to Bears today. If they had a guy in the back of that bullpen, now they need us. Everybody needs a slugger. But Mully, to your point, you can get that back end of the bullpen guy for a much cheaper cost than that slugger.
Maybe, but not to go full bigs on you here, but I don't know that there's anything at the closer store worth shopping for. I don't know who's on the market that you say, oh, yeah, this is the guy that's going to solve all the problems. Josh Hader isn't walking through that door.
How about the kid on the A's?
Mason Miller's not a free agent.
Well, but the Cubs have a lot of stuff, right?
Well, if you want to trade for a guy like Mason Miller, yeah, go out and get Mason Miller and then get everybody used to seeing 104-mile-per-hour fastballs at Wrigley Field. That's great. But I think when you look at via free agency as a question sort of addressed, there's not a free agent out there that says, okay, automatic upgrade. If you want to finagle a trade for Mason Miller, good luck, Jed, in doing that. The A's would be, I think, loath to give up somebody like that. It would be a blockbuster. Might be worth it. I think that you look at, you have to, again, everybody's got a role to play. And until they tell us they're not going to be in the market for a big bat or a big ticket free agent, then you got to keep asking the question about, are they in the Juan Soto conversation? Probably not. What's Pete Alonso going to do next year? Is he going to be a guy that is out there? Well, you know what? If he is on the market, yes, bring him to Wrigley Field so he can hit 45 home runs. You need a big bat. They lacked a big bat. Jed talked yesterday in Philly to the beat writers and about the 90-win roster that Craig Counsell says the Cubs should be having every season, and he's right. Both guys know that. You help get your team better and closer to that by going out and getting Pete Alonso, somebody who can hit a lot of home runs, somebody that is a power bat, maybe Vlad Guerrero. That'd be likely a trade, but that would be my first priority, and then probably closer. I don't know where this talk about needing a free agent pitcher, it's going to be a long-term contract for a starter, and I don't know if that makes any sense, and I know Corbin Burns will be a name you hear a lot of. I don't know that he's going to be coming to Chicago.
You know how that's a great question.
Oh, that's the voice of the head coach of the Illini, Brett Bielema. He will be here at 7:25. Illinois beat Nebraska Friday night. Moved up in the AP poll to number 19. Notre Dame survived Miami of Ohio. Kept their spot, but was far from impressive. NIU lost to Buffalo in their first game back since upsetting Notre Dame. What was the most significant game from this weekend's college football slate?
Well, I think you could have almost predicted that NIU was going to have some sort of letdown. It's a shame that they did in that conference, though, was pretty even. So, Maction strikes again. They lose to Buffalo. Notre Dame struggled. I think 28-3 doesn't say they struggled, but anybody watched that game in the first half, you started to wonder, oh boy, here we go again. Miami of Ohio was competitive, and then they weren't. So, I didn't feel like that was anything worth more than maybe a shrug. What Illinois did at Nebraska against Dylan Raiola and Matt Rhule and the resurgent Cornhuskers on Friday night was, well, one of those moments in a season you wonder if it's a turnaround moment for the program. We came into the season with Brett Bielema. We're talking to him at 7:25, but we talked to him about needing to have this kind of a start. And you know what the Illini did? They went out and they had this kind of a start. That's significant. When the Illini are ranked in the top 25 and now the top 20, you give him credit. They're doing it with the quarterback and Altmaier. He's getting things done. The defense has been better than advertised. And that is something in the Big Ten. You look at the surprise teams, Illinois along with Indiana, right near the top of that list.
Well, for me, it was Illinois by a landslide. That was a very entertaining game Friday night. Not a fan of the Friday night football, but I did pay close attention to that game. And again, Brett Bielema on with you guys at 7:25.
Yeah, watch that game. That was a huge game. I'm going to go a little bit of a twisted route here. I'm going to say North Carolina losing to James Madison so badly. North Carolina favored by 12 in the hook in that game. They lost 70-50. They gave up 50 points in the first half of that game. And Mac Brown, after the game, talked about retiring. He actually told the team that if they want him to retire, he would leave. And he has in the interim apologized and said he regrets saying it. But what do we say about guys? Mac Brown's 73 years old.
Yeah.
What do we say about people who
once
threaten to retire?
You have retired in your mind, you have retired in your mind for good.
I mean, that loss knocked him out of college football, as far as I can tell. And whether he sticks around for the rest of the year, goes in the offseason, whether he decides to put it up with another year of it. That's the end game now for Mac Brown. Not that it wasn't before, but man, is that a bad loss when your coach is ready to hang up the whistle at halftime.
And you give James Madison $500,000 for showing up.
That's right. Yeah, we know what those games are like. So classic college football game to just, I saw that result and I was like, I thought I'd misread it.
It was a blowout.
Unbelievable.
And one that nobody expected. You would think when you schedule James Madison, you might see a 70-point showing, but maybe by the team that
that's right.
You know, it is the home team,
right.
The Power 5 team.